Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I don't know anything about anything, Gavin.
That's why we hired you as the host, JP.
Keep that as the intro, please.
It's so terrible, it's funny.
You just gave me my intro.
Yeah.
It's my dev. You want to repeat what I just said?
No. I want you to try something else.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we're going to feature Asian Man Records, Harlan, which is a local short film, and Ryan Baxter Reenactor, a full-length film. Ryan Baxter Reenactor is a locally produced film from director Brandon Haberman. It stars Matt Whitaker, the co-director of the Salt Lake City Film Festival and the drummer of Birthquake, as a bad actor who stars in cable television reenactment pieces. The film was financed independently on a shoestring, with the film's creators only asking for Kickstarter donations to finish the audio and for a release. Slug writer Cody Kirkland spoke with Whitaker about the film.
Tell us a little bit about your teaching gig and the various film projects you've been involved with.
Well, teaching, I started out while I was doing my undergrad in film production doing some plays at the community college with the chair of the division. His name's Frank Garish, and I did some plays with him in their Black Box Theater. And what ended up happening is he and I became friends, and then he just approached me after I got my bachelor's and just said, hey, are you interested in teaching some intro to film classes? I said, well, of course. I mean, why not? That sounds awesome. So I ended up doing that and then picked up a film and culture class. And so it's not like my full-time job or anything, because adjuncts, we don't get paid anything, and it's kind of rough. But he and I guess, like I said, became friends. And since then, I just have been picking up contracts here and there to work here at the community college. So that's cool. As far as like film production goes, like I said, I have my undergrad in film. My background is initially in acting in front of the camera. And then because I wanted to go more behind the camera, that's when I started to do, working on various projects, shooting music videos. I run like a little underground production company. We just shoot commercials and things for businesses locally. The first thing I ever worked on that was like a bigger production was a really horrible movie called Ice Spiders on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I don't know if I've seen it, but I can imagine.
Oh, it's terrible. And I dug up a review of it with this like 500-pound man in his parents' basement, like talking about how awful it was. And if this kid who lives in his parents' basement can be like mocking this film, then it's got to be pretty bad. Then I did a film called The Yankles, which is kind of like Bad News Bears meets Hasidic Jewish people. And that was pretty fun. I played the pitcher of the team. And I'm not a pitcher. Like, I don't play baseball. I know nothing about baseball. So if you watch the film, you might see that. And that film actually just got picked up by Magnolia Pictures.
Oh, cool.
So it's getting distribution, which is kind of cool. Then obviously Ryan Baxter Reenactor. We're still working on that. And I just got cast in a film called Darkness.
Cool.
So they're shooting up in Heber in a couple weeks, I guess.
What are some music videos you've done?
Right now I'm working on a couple, actually. Doing a couple for Palace of Buddies. And I've done some stuff for Birthquake, obviously.
You're a co-producer and have a lead role in Ryan Baxter Reenactor. Tell us about your character.
Okay, well, Ryan Baxter, the whole premise of the film is Ryan Baxter is a reenactor for like low budget cable reenactments. And like think like the History Channel and those awful reenactments you see. Well, there's clearly people that make those, and then there's the people that make those and have no money, like they're very low budget versions. Ryan Baxter works for one of those companies. The thing that's kind of funny is Ryan Baxter, he's got his own perception of historical accuracy, I guess you could say, but it's completely wrong. But that's why I think there's some comedy there. Like, he's not intentionally like an idiot. He really is convinced that he's right. And so Ryan Baxter's kind of this guy who thinks that his historical inaccuracies are correct.
In the film, you get to play a character who gets to play a lot of really cool characters, like Bigfoot in the infamous Bigfoot sighting story, and Roy Orbison, or Harry Orbison, as Ryan calls him. His portrayal of John Wilkes Booth is particularly hilarious, as he just kind of wanders around trying to decide who Abraham Lincoln is. What are some of your favorites favorite characters that...
That I got to do in the film?
Yeah.
Well, I really, you know, I liked doing Roy Orbison quite a bit, and I'll tell you why. When we shot that scene, and all it is that, you know, it's this reenactment of Roy Orbison's concert, and clearly, you know, Roy Orbison does not move, so the joke is he should do everything but not move. And when we shot it, Brandon Haberman, the director of the film, he just rolled the camera and just said, okay, be funny. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, you know, be funny. So I guess I'll just move around. And so literally for 15 minutes that camera rolled. You don't see the footage in the film, but there's 15 minutes of just the most absurd stuff. But the funny thing is however funny the Roy Orbison bit may be, the reactions from the backup band are the best part about it. Sasquatch was fun. We shot, because we were really, it's a very low budget film, we shot that up in the mountains, just, you know, we knew some space, but wasn't told this when we were shooting. It was hunting season, and Brandon was scared to death. He didn't tell me, and I'm glad he didn't, but like, I had this Sasquatch outfit on, and I'm wandering around in the woods, and it's hunting season, and we're presumably in areas where people could be hunting. I'm not wearing anything to denote that I'm not a hunter, so, or anything. I'm here though, so that's good.
You made it.
I made it
out alive. Personally, I thought your acting style seemed like a mix between Steve Carell and Jack Black. Maybe just the physical comedy, the kind of outrageous.
Yeah. I think that there's kind of a mixture of, like, I mean, you could say Jack Black. I really like Zach Galifianakis. I like his current work, but there's a video he did specifically for Tim and Eric, awesome show, called The Snuggler. I don't know if you've seen it. He's just a guy who goes around in short shorts and snuggles people back to life, or people that have been injured. He just, you know, spoons with them and snuggles them. He does a lot of movements with his body that are very, like, he's very gingerly about how he moves and his movements, and I like that. I think that there's kind of that element of, you know, using your body to be funny, but not to, like, be overly funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's some, this is going to sound so awful, but I do think, not awful, but really, really, really like the physical humor of, like, Charlie Chaplin. Like, the way he moves, I think, is very funny. And I'm not in any way saying I channeled that, because that would be near impossible because he's brilliant. But I guess I could say I tried to a degree. I kind of like the idea that Ryan's, like, he is stupid and he is loud, but he says things that make him, like, the way he sometimes speaks, he speaks a little more eloquently than you'd think, which kind of gives it this weird dynamic of, like,
yeah,
what is wrong with
that.
This guy? Like, he speaks eloquently, but he's so dumb and just missing the mark. I don't know.
During production of Ryan Baxter, you worked with a close-knit crew of local talent. How does the Salt Lake film scene compare with the rest of the country?
You know, that is also a very good question. I mean, it's hard to say because I don't live anywhere else. I would say that with the advent of, you know, there's a lot of affordable technology, so that makes it a little easier to shoot independent film. But as far as the scene goes, you know, there's a lot of good stuff coming out of Salt Lake. There's a lot of people just kind of stepping out over the edge and saying, we're just going to make, you know, we're going to make an independent film. We're going to make it work. Like, Must Come Down. And they're great. And the film looks amazing. There's a movie that a grad student shot up at the U called, it's an adaptation of Hansel and Gretel. And I haven't seen it, but the trailer looked good. And I mean, you look at the footage and you look at the trailer and go, wow, they shot that on $50,000. Like, how did that, really? That's insane. That's so cheap. There are a lot of talented people on both sides of the camera. It always comes down to a question of, you know, there is, I think, a certain threshold of money that is needed to at least get things off the ground. Because there are people out there who would argue, you know, anybody can make a film for nothing. And it's true. You really can. You can make a film for next to nothing. But beyond the financial element, you need to have connections. That's the only reason, for example, Ryan Baxter Reenactor got made, was we had money behind it, you know, but it was self-financed by Brandon. So, which is awesome, you know, I mean, he put some serious money into it and obviously some serious risk that goes along with that. But then on the flip side, he was shooting, you know, a several million dollar movie with not anywhere near that budget. Like, we had way, way, way less than that. The point is, you have to call in favors. You have to have, like, a network in place. And Salt Lake has that network. There are people in place that want to just be active and involved in the film scene. And because of that, you can find locations. You can find people that will work because of their love and passion for the medium, as opposed to people who are just like, I want a SAG credit, or this better show up on my IMDb page. Just tell me when it's done. These are people who show up on set, and like you say, they're good on all aspects of the camera. So you have people, you have actors that can come in and actually double as crew. You'll have crew that can be extras. It works, it really does.
The film is currently in the process of applying to film festivals for its official debut. And for more info on the film, you can visit ryanbaxterfilm.com. Stark Raving Mad is a punk rock band from Salt Lake City, and the group formed last summer and is comprised of members from now-defunct local punk bands such as Killbot, Negative Charge, and Shackleton. In December 2011, the band released their debut full-length album, Losin' to Will It All. This is In a Bottle from their debut. Was Stark Raving Mad with In a Bottle from their debut album. The band will be playing Slugs Localized next week on Friday the 13th with Handy Capitalist and Chain Whip. The show takes place at the Urban Lounge. It's at 241 South 500 East. Doors are open at 9 and the show starts at 10. Tickets are just $5. If you've missed Localized in the past, you can visit the video section on our website for a glimpse into what you're missing. For more info on the band, check out our April issue and search for the group on Facebook. Harlan is a short film created by writer-podcaster Adam Pelcher. The movie stars Ryan Jensen, former lead singer of local band Vile Blue Shades, as a serial killer named Harlan Joseph Granger, who has never been caught but is finally planning to turn himself in. The film takes a documentary-style approach wherein a cameraman asks Granger tough questions that force him to analyze his methods and why he kills. Slug writer Johnny Logan recently chatted with Pelcher about the film.
Adam, for those not familiar with the film, could you give us a brief synopsis?
Yeah, essentially it's about a guy named Nathan who gets an email from this guy saying he's this famous serial killer, that he saw something that he wrote about him on the internet and wants him to come out and interview him for his last couple days before he turns himself in. Now, Harlan himself is the serial killer that he goes out to interview, and he talks about what he did, why he did it, that kind of thing. We're kind of in his zone, I guess, a little bit, so.
Nice. Now, where did the idea for this film come from?
You know, like, I always see interviews with serial killers, and I always think they're really crazy and interesting, and just the guys are obviously unstable. And I thought it was kind of cool to flip the script a little bit and have someone go out to somewhere where those guys are more comfortable and put a little fear into the audience more than something safe, like in a prison, yeah. Stuff, something like that. So him going to crime scenes and him going into town and stuff, and seeing that part and seeing that this guy was able to get away with it for so long, it seems more scary and fucked up to me to do that than to show somebody, like show Harlan cutting somebody's head off or something like that, you know. To what you create in your mind is going to be way scarier than anything I can show you as a filmmaker. So.
Oh, definitely. Now, tell us a little bit about the setting. It's mostly kind of, you know, cabin in the woods type of area. But where exactly did you shoot it?
We shot it in Oakley, Utah. A good friend of mine and ended up being the sound editor and boom guy, Andy Patterson, famous actually, you know, local celebrity almost as far as the recording industry goes. Yeah. He's recorded a lot of music and bands. I'm sure people listening to this podcast have heard a band that Andy's recorded. So we shot it out in his cabin. You know, I went out there, kind of did location scouting with him. We were initially going to shoot about 5 months before that. It actually got finished, but there was so much snow still that you couldn't even walk to the cabin. So we kind of had to bunk that idea and then shoot it. We ended up shooting in the summer, and we brought it out. And I figured, you know, it was rural enough where, like, there's not a lot of people around. You know, it's closed off enough. There's actually a whole section of the cabin that's not shown in the film, where the crew stayed over the weekend that we shot it. And, you know, it's secluded enough, and there's, you know, rivers close by and stuff that we could change the locations up enough where it didn't seem like we're shooting in the same spot. And then luckily he had this garage, this massive, almost like a barn garage, next to the house, next to the cabin, the, you know, pretty up-to-date cabin. There's this crappy old garage with all these tools and stuff in it, and it had a room upstairs where almost fit perfectly to where I imagined Harlan would stay. So after I saw the location, I was like, yeah, we gotta do it here. And you know, it ended up working out really nicely. So it was really hot. We all got sunburned. You know, there's eaten alive by bugs because we were really out in this marsh for a couple scenes, you know. So it wasn't the most comfortable. People were getting pissed off at a certain point just because we just kept getting eaten alive. But you know, that's just kind of part of the process. So it was fun. It was a fun process, and it only took us 2 days.
Ryan Jensen, who Slug readers might remember as the lead singer of Via Blue Shades, mm-hmm. and the Corleones,
yeah.
He plays your main character, Harlan. How did he get involved with the project? In your opinion, what was the best thing he brought to the film?
If anyone knows Ryan, and even if you don't, you know, he's just kind of naturally weird anyway. He's kind of just a strange guy, and not in a bad way. I love him to death, and I actually didn't know him too well. Like, I kind of knew him beforehand, just through friends and through music, and stuff like that. And you know, I always knew who he was, but I gave the script to my buddy Adam Sherlock, who is Nathan in the film, mm-hmm. and we were trying to think of somebody that would, you know, fit the part of Harlan. And we had a few ideas, and we were talking about maybe Sherlock doing it. And Sherlock's like, he's like, I think I would just kind of mess it up because it's so intricate, and you really just got to cast it right. And we thought of a few other people, but as soon as he said Ryan, it just fit too perfect. I mean, he's like 6'8" and has a hair lip, you know, and he's just kind of naturally weird anyway.
Yeah.
What he brought to it, I think, was just him being him. Like, he definitely was really pretty scared to do it because, you know, I got this thing funded by Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I got like $3,000 to do it. And basically, most of that was going to go into post-production. So there wasn't like a ton on the line. You know, he thought we were actually using film when we were using digital, and so he kind of eased into a lot. We did some screen reading. We read through the screenplay probably 4 or 5 times, and he was just nervous. And sometimes he completely sold it, and sometimes he would get really nervous. But I think for the most part, like, what he brought was just this natural, I'm not like offending Ryan here, but this natural creepiness that we played up through the script, you know, like but he's also kind of a lovable guy in a way. Like he says and does a few things that worked for the script, and he read the script pretty close to what I had initially written. But at the same time, with the documentary style that we were trying to make it with, it kind of worked if he fucked up his lines or something, because there's a certain scene where he's out sitting talking about this girl that he had murdered and going through, you know, why he's doing this. And there's a point where he actually messes up his lines and he looks away, but he just keeps on going. And it was a lot more natural, and it made it feel more natural, you know, when we were trying to kind of shoot for that anyway, so.
You mentioned Adam Sherlock. People might know him as, you know, you guys co-host a damn podcast together.
Yeah.
Did he have any other involvement in the film besides the role?
Yeah, I mean, he's my hetero life mate. He's one of my best friends, and we work really well creatively together. And I think especially when it comes to movies, because that's what we geek out about the most on the podcast, if anyone's heard it. He brings a lot. I mean, and he's got, luckily, an extensive knowledge of serial killers, so he knew kind of what worked and what didn't. He was always kind of the person that I fell back on when it came to something at the story that wasn't working or something wasn't flowing. Like, we initially... And this is not just Adam. I mean, he was definitely a big part of it, but the end shot, you know, I won't give anything away, but the end shot kind of came to fruition on set when we were shooting that first day. I had a little bit of a different idea to end it, but we kind of all got together and just put our heads together and said, why is this working? What is the ultimate goal here? And what we ended up with, like, was worlds better than what I initially came up with in the script. And we got a killer end shot with it, and really resonated with Harlan and what he was, you know, trying to get across. So a lot of people brought a lot to it, but Sherlock is definitely a huge part of the creative process. And just, he was there, you know, reading with Ryan, of course, as well, since he had half the script of asking the questions. I mean, he's basically the audience in the movie. But he's also got that deep, empowering voice that's...
I was wondering where the laugh track came from.
Yeah.
That's a joke for you guys listening. Okay. What can we expect to see from this film? Like, are you submitting it to festivals? Where can people see it?
Yeah. A big portion of the Kickstarter money went to submitting it to festivals. I've submitted to about 30 so far. You know, fingers crossed that it's going to get into at least a couple of them. So, you know, if not, it's a learning process. It seems, you know, diving into it, it's a pretty political kind of thing sometimes in certain, you know, you never know who's actually going to watch the movie. And it's so easy to make a movie these days. The competition and the amount of entries goes up a shitload to any other... anybody else who takes a weekend to shoot a movie and really, you know, thinks about it and prepares for it ahead of time. So there's a lot going into it, but I'm hoping that people will eventually see it. I will be putting it online probably sometime this summer. There's a lot of restrictions with the festivals on having it on the internet available. Like, they want you to premiere wherever, if they accept you or not. So there's a little bit of hesitancy to, you know, put it online quite yet, but just a few more months and I imagine people will be able to see it. So
do you think this, you know, the short film as itself, does it have any potential to become a feature film?
I'm not sure. I mean, it definitely has potential. There's a lot there that you could explore. I think the short film, just the medium of the short film, is cool, forced creativity in a way. You know, it kind of forces you to really delve into what you want to say. You know, I think a lot was said in this film, at least to me and people that I've shown. Feature film could be cool, for sure. I haven't really thought about writing a script for that, and I don't know if Ryan could last a whole film. He was pretty stressed out initially about it. So, and the first time he saw it was the premiere. He didn't want to look in the camera or anything. So, and he's kind of, and I'm sure someone else could do it, but not quite like the way he did it. He had quite a presence. So,
yeah. What did he think about the film?
He said he loved it, but he was also, you know, pretty nervous about it as well. So, you know, I've gotten really, really positive response from pretty much everyone saying they were really creeped out, which was my goal. Like, some people said they shut it off halfway through because they didn't want to think about that. There's one guy too, even at the premiere, I didn't know him. He was like a friend of the owner or something that we showed it, and he actually worked in a prison. He worked in a prison with these types of guys and hangs out with them, and he had to leave and he was pissed off, and he came back and like cornered Ryan for like 45 minutes saying people aren't ready for this and blah blah blah. And I'm like, I mean, it's you know, I say some pretty harsh things in there, but he's also done some pretty harsh things, so you know, that's probably an exaggeration of what people should expect, I definitely would think. But it's cool to know that someone that's in that realm was that affected by it. So I mean, that's kind of what I hope you take away from it, is now you don't make make a movie to watch once. So, you know, you walk away from it, you know, thinking about it and having it affect you that way, you know, like so many directors have with me. And, you know, just there's some movies that are, you know, so good that you have to like set them aside for a couple months and say, I'm going to wait to watch that again because it, you know, it messed with me. And I think that's a good thing. Not everyone does. And it, you know, that's not always, there's not always a happy ending. But if it's interesting enough and the story is good enough, I think pretty much anyone can do what I did. It was really fun.
The film is currently in the process of applying to film festivals for its official debut. For more info on Paltry as well as his podcast, check out adamnpodcast.com. It's time once more to do the weekly daily calendar rundown. I'm joined today by Gavin, our wonderful producer, and of course, Man About Town.
What up?
Hey, man, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I had a choice.
Yeah, you had none, I know that.
Esther Maroño, who could not be here, but she's here in spirit.
Tuesday, March 27th, are you ready to kick off with one of your favorite bands from the 90s?
What? Not a surf?
Exactly.
Yeah. Let me tell you, along with Ann Horse over at the Urban Lounge.
And it's going to be a pretty good show if you like weirdly named bands, I guess. I don't know. What do you have to say about Not a Surf?
I barely remember them.
Well, they had a resurgence in the late 2000s and people started thinking they were really cool because they had that one song, Popular, right?
Yeah. Do you like Not a Surf?
I've heard some of their new stuff. Actually, it's not that bad. I don't think it was bad before, but they got the moniker of a one-hit wonder, or the classification of that, rather, and they haven't really been able to shake it until recently.
Well, that's because that song, the way it was built, is just so...
awesome? That's the word?
That's not the word I'm going for, but thanks for trying to throw that down my throat. If you haven't heard it, kids, why don't you pause this and go listen to it on YouTube real quick. But the way that they constructed it, you couldn't help but not be a one-hit wonder. I mean, what do you follow up with that?
It took them about 10 years to find something from what we could tell for popular culture, yeah.
Clearly.
We've got a birthday on that day as well.
We do?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Kylie Cox.
That's a pretty good Esther impersonation. She gets really excited about birthdays.
I mean, let me try to do a proper Esther impression. Happy birthday, Kylie.
Thank you for the hand motions on that.
She's one of our music reviewers. We like her.
And Wednesday, March 28th, Lucero, Larry and His Flask will be at Urban. That's an alt-country with the punk-influenced bluegrass punk sort of feel to the show. Are you going to go to that?
I'll try. Lucero, not that bad. Larry and His Flask, haven't heard them yet.
Thursday, March 29th, is going to be another great show at the Stateroom.
Lost in the Trees and Poor Man. Do you get to the Stateroom all that often?
Well, I don't want to jump ahead in the list, but later on in the week, I'm going to see a show at the Stateroom, yeah.
Then let's discuss it then.
Okay.
In the meantime, another birthday. Do you want to do the honors? You want to do your stare impression?
Yeah, actually, she would laugh first if I asked her to do an impersonation of someone. So I will laugh and then say, happy birthday, Ishabi! You're welcome. She's a writer here at Slug. Thanks, Gavin.
And then Friday, March 30th, over at that there complex that they got over there, Black Dahlia Murder, Nile, and Skeleton Witch.
I am familiar with some of these bands. They're metal, mainly. Different versions of metal. Some like...
little metal thrash, little death metal, little black metal.
It's mainly sort of thrashy.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, these kids these days, though. That's not James Taylor. Hey, he's seen fire, he's seen rain, he's seen other things that'll never change or something.
Speaking of things changing, another birthday. Happy birthday, Hannah Christian. She's a copy editor.
Those are good. That was your best Esther impression, yeah.
It's become a kind of an art to do the Esther.
And Saturday, March 31st, it's going to be another day of fun at In the Venue. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
Wow.
The band's name is Fun, technically.
Nobody got that joke until you just said that.
It's going to be a great show from a band named after one of my favorite pastimes. They've got a song maybe you've heard on the radio or probably under an Audi commercial by now. It's called We Are Young.
Mm.
It's pretty catchy if you're into that sort of stuff. Monday, April 2nd, There used to be this band called Soul Coughing. Perhaps you've heard of them.
I would prefer to ignore my old DJ career where all I ever heard was the song Circles every other hour.
I don't
Shut up! Stop!
Sorry. The former singer of Soul Coughing now has a solo project. His name is Mike Dowdy, and I don't think he'll be playing that song. He's going to be doing a book reading from his recent memoir, The Book of Drugs, and he'll be playing some solo stuff in between the readings. And it should be pretty good. I'm looking forward to going to that show. That's the aforementioned show at the Stateroom that I wanted to catch. His solo stuff is pretty good.
And you were holding the book upstairs.
I'm going to finish the book, yeah, before the show. I'll have that posted on the internet.
You know, David Bryan from Talking Heads used to do a lot of solo shit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Until he realized that the only reason people were coming was so they could hear him sing Burning Down the House. So, I get your earplugs ready. You're probably going to be hearing a lot of El Oso album.
I don't think so. I hope not. I really prefer his solo stuff. But mainly I've only ever heard his singles on the solo record, so maybe I don't know how he does it live. Who knows?
Hey, JP.
What's that?
Why don't you tell us about that iPhone app you don't have?
I'd love to tell you about that app. I do know a few things about it, even though I don't have an iPhone. You can past episodes on your phone through the app. You can also call Soundwaves, us, and let us know what you think about the podcast. You can listen to the podcast. Is there anything else I'm forgetting?
You can send us an email.
You can send us an email, too. Basically, everything Slug Mag in your pocket.
Yeah, you can read the whole issue as we're speaking right now. That brand new April issue that's on the way?
Yeah.
You can read it.
Can you read it on a train?
You probably can.
Can you read it on a plane?
Yes.
No, you can't, because let me turn your phone off.
No, that's Words with Friends.
Oh, hey, Alec Baldwin reference. I was wondering when we get an Alec Baldwin reference.
Ah!
Good anyway. Job, Gavin. Hey, thanks for joining me for another events issue, edition, whatever.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Asian Man Records is an indie punk label from California. It was founded in 1989 under the name Dill Records, then reestablished under the new name in 1996. It has been home to names such as Bucka 9, Less Than Jake, Link 80, Alkaline Trio, and Andrew Jackson Jihad. Earlier this month, the label released a 7-inch record from Primary, Army of Helaman. Group features members of Link 80 and Shinobu, featuring Mormon children's songs as hardcore songs. Slug's contributing editor Ricky Vigil spoke with the label's founder and owner, Mike Park of Asian Man Records.
How did you first become familiar with this Primary project?
Well, it's actually, there's a couple people that I've been friends with. It's the guitarist for Link 80 and then the bassist for the band Shinobu. And it was their idea. They had just meeting each other through the years, realized they all went to Mormon school. So they thought about this idea of starting this hardcore band covering songs they used to sing in school. And so they just asked me, hey, we want to do this. It's going to be extreme, almost like crusty hardcore punk. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. That's how it started, and then when they gave me the finished product, I was like, wow, it's so good, it's so funny, too.
Yeah.
So you can tell they just had a really good time doing it.
Yeah, so why did you want Asian Man to be involved with it? Is it just because of your previous relationships with these guys?
Yeah, pretty much. I like to do fun releases, too, and I thought this would just be a good one to have in the catalog.
What do you think is the relationship of punk rock and religion, or if there is a relationship?
It's hard to say. I guess the only relationship would be with the individuals in the band. If they happen to grow up in a certain faith and then they get into punk rock, that's the only relationship I can think of.
And is this only being pressed one time?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm praying that we can sell them all.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a tough one.
How's the reaction been? Are you selling them, or people? Have you seen stuff on the internet?
Yeah, I think it's good. The band doesn't play. They play once in a blue moon, so it's there's no buzz from that. It's strictly, it really was strictly done for fun. And actually, when we put it out, when we were planning to put it out, our goal was only for you guys to listen to it, honestly.
For people in Utah?
We said, right, we want Slug to hear this. I mean, that's no lie. We're like, we got to send this to Slug, see what they think.
Are you serious?
Oh, I swear. We just thought, we don't know. I mean, we would love to send it to anybody, some kind of music magazine that has their roots in Utah.
Yeah.
Salt Lake City area, but we just only... periodically we know the Slug magazine. They're like, oh, I wonder if anybody on their staff grew up in the Mormon church. And if they like punk rock, then hopefully they'll really like this.
Yeah, well, we have lots of Mormons and former Mormons on the Slug staff and in Salt Lake, so, yeah, I'm hoping some people will hear it and will be into it.
Yeah, I just think you know, it's a cool thing and it's a fun thing, and I've definitely put out releases like this where it's just, even if we sell every copy, we're not going to make pennies off it, so it's just a fun release that we're excited about.
From that album, Army of Helaman, here's I Hope They Call Me on a Mission and Army of Helaman. The album is currently available for $5 in physical form only via Asian Man Records. To buy the album and check out more from the bands and label, visit AsianManRecords.com. Thanks for listening to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What summer movies are you interested in or looking forward to? Do you have a specific 2012 film you'd like to hear Slug's film critic Jimmy Martin's opinions on? Feel free to send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com and let us know. Or you can call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324, or you can call us via that iPhone app we mentioned earlier. We may just play your call on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art designed by T. Doan. And technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's episode, we're going to feature a profile on Chuck Reagan. Jeffrey from Yelp is going to be letting us know about good sushi in town, what to avoid and what not to. And we'll be doing a tour recap with SLFM.